Hi, everybody. Good to be with you today. We're studying Martin Heidegger's Being and Time, a long and difficult book. I'm going to do everything I can to help make it accessible to you so that later, when you read the whole thing, or when you read parts of it, or encounter Heideggerian terminology in some other context, it'll make sense and you can understand what's going on. Obviously, in 4 introductory sessions, we can't cover every detail, but this will give you a good head start. My goal will be to lay a solid foundation today about the project in general, and then in the following sessions to make sure we hit all the essential, big picture points throughout the book. I have to tell you straight away that there's no way to talk about Heidegger without having to use the words being and beings a lot. You'll have to get used to it. It's part of the shift Heidegger wants us to make. Just don't get mad at me for it. Being, beings, and later in your study of Heidegger, being with a Y. There's no other way around it. This is what we have to work with. As Schmidt writes in the foreword to this translation, to carry out his project, quote, Heidegger introduces a vocabulary that challenges the reader. We find neologisms alongside commonplace words that are used in quite uncommon senses. We read, for instance, of being in the world, hyphenated, being with, hyphenated, worldliness, thrownness, attunement, temporality, conscience, facticity, everydayness, equipment, anxiety, authenticity, care, objective presence, equiprimordiality, and taking care, to name just a few of the words that need to be listened to carefully. The language of this text frequently needs to be heard in a different register than the one to which we might be accustomed. Meanings are stretched, roots of words are highlighted, small and seemingly insignificant words, in, for instance, are shown to be complex and in need of careful reflection. Heidegger argued that it is the business of philosophy to preserve the power of the most elemental words. Reading Being and Time, one experiences this elemental power of language, unquote. We'll have to be sensitive to that as we introduce and discuss all his vocabulary. So let's begin with the introduction. We start with this observation from Plato's dialogue, The Sophist. The context is that the discussants, in The Sophist I mean, are talking about those thinkers who say there are a few explanatory principles for what exists. For instance, fire or water or number or whatever. So you say there are this many explanatory principles for everything that exists. And now here's the question. If you say, for example, that heat and cold are the principles of existence, what do you mean when you say that they are? What is this are or being of the principles? Is it a third thing alongside them? So you have heat, cold, and being. The stranger in the dialogue says, in the context of this conversation, I used to think that being was clear and non-being perplexing. But as I matured, I came to understand that being is also perplexing. Being itself is perplexing, not just if you have children like I do. They're always asking about nothing. How can nothing be something? What is nothing? What does it mean to be nothing? They're focused on non-being as perplexing. But when you mature, you see that being itself is a question. In short, we are perplexed by the meaning of being. But, still staying with the introduction here, we're not perplexed by our own inability to understand the meaning of being. So we have a roughshod understanding of the meaning of being. When you hear me pronounce the words, the door is open, you don't trip over yourself trying to understand what I mean by is, you get it. So there's a roughshod already there understanding of being, something Heidegger's going to make a lot of. But we don't hone in on the genuine perplexity about the meaning of being. That we don't do as a rule in our ordinary lives. And according to Heidegger, we must reawaken for ourselves the sense of this question, the question of the meaning of being, which today has been forgotten. We don't seem to think that the battle of the giants concerning being, that Plato wrote about in The Sophist is something we must rekindle. So on one hand, you have the meaning of being is perplexing. And on the other hand, you have our not being troubled by the perplexity. And that itself is a problem in itself. Heidegger says, let's reawaken our sense for the question, what does it mean to be? The question of being is not just any question. It's the question that sustained the research of Plato and Aristotle. And yet somehow through the tradition of the history of philosophy, the dogma took shape that the question of the meaning of being is superfluous and should be neglected, since being is the most universal concept and the emptiest concept, and whoever talks about being already understands what it means. Here Heidegger is indicating something that he brings out in other works, like for example in the short volume called Basic Concepts, that we have inherited this sort of dogmatic view about being that it doesn't require our further examination. It's the most universal. It's what you can say about anything. Everybody already knows what it is. Those are all somehow valuable and important in themselves, deflections away from the perplexity of being. And Heidegger's saying, look, to say that being is the most universal concept or the emptiest concept or self-evident is not to remove the perplexity. After all, if we speak about self-evidence, for example, say it's self-evident, why should it be the case that everybody understands when we say the sky is blue or I am happy? Why does everybody understand the is or the am? Why? What is this always already there pre-understood sense of being? Or what is this quote-unquote average comprehensibility, as he puts it when asking? On one hand, we understand being already automatically. On the other, the meaning of being is shrouded in darkness. That strange fact shows the need for us to recover the question of the meaning of being. We're faced with the problem, though, that not only do we not have the answer to the question of the meaning of being, we don't even know what the question is really asking or how we would go about answering it.